All right, let's dive right in. We're taking a look at Tessier v. Rockefeller, a fascinating case from the New Hampshire Supreme Court back in 2011.
Yeah, it's a pretty wild one.
So we're going deep on this one, really breaking down how the court dealt with some pretty heavy claims. Fraudulent misrepresentation, you've got negligent infliction of emotional distress, and to top it off, the whole idea of a law firm being held liable for the actions of one of their attorneys.
Right. Vicarious liability.
Exactly. All this playing out in the context of a motion to dismiss, which for our listeners who maybe aren't super familiar with legal procedure, that's like the first hurdle a case has to clear.
Yeah. Early stage, but super important.
Absolutely. So before we get into the weeds, I think it would be helpful to set the scene. What exactly happened here? What's the story behind Tessier v. Rockefeller?
Okay, so you've got Lorraine Tessier and her husband, Thomas, who was an attorney, gets accused of mishandling some estate funds.
Mishandling how?
Well, these funds belong to a Dr. Frederick Jakobiak. And the person making the accusation was Regina Rockefeller, an attorney at Nixon Peabody. Rockefeller represented Dr. Jakobiak, and she allegedly really came down hard on Thomas Tessier.
What do you mean by came down hard?
We're talking threats of disciplinary action, like being reported to the state Supreme Court, maybe even facing criminal charges if he didn't pay the money back right away.
Wow, talk about pressure.
Yeah, and that's where Lorraine Tessier enters the picture. She claims that this intense pressure on her husband basically forced her to take out a reverse mortgage on their home.
Oh, man.
And she says she felt compelled to agree to a settlement to repay the funds. You can imagine the stress that would put on a family, right?
Absolutely, trying to protect their home and their finances.
Exactly. But here's where it gets even more complicated. Even though they reached a settlement, Rockefeller and Nixon Peabody, her firm, went ahead and reported Thomas Tessier's alleged misconduct anyway.
Hold on, so they allegedly promised to drop it if the money was repaid, and then they didn't.
That's what Lorraine Tessier alleged. And according to her lawsuit, the consequences were disastrous. They lost a lot of assets, she experienced severe emotional distress, and she even ended up needing to be hospitalized. So she sued Rockefeller and Nixon Peabody.
Makes sense. So where did the case go from there?
The trial court initially dismissed most of her claims. But when the case went up to the New Hampshire Supreme Court, they actually reversed some of those dismissals.
Interesting. So the Supreme Court saw something there, some merit in at least some of her arguments. What were the big legal issues they were looking at?
Well, a few major ones. First, did Lorraine Tessier present enough evidence to support a claim of fraudulent misrepresentation against Rockefeller? Second, could she sue for negligent infliction of emotional distress, which we often shorten to NIG? And third, could Nixon Peabody, the firm, be held responsible for Rockefeller's actions under this legal principle of respondent superior? It was all about vicarious liability.
Okay, so a lot of legal ground to cover. I think it would be helpful to break down each of those issues one by one. Let's start with fraudulent misrepresentation. What did Lorraine Tessier need to show to make that claim stick?
So to win on a fraudulent misrepresentation claim, you generally have to prove a few things. First, someone made a false statement. Second, they knew it was false or were reckless about whether it was true or not. Third, they wanted you to rely on that false statement. Fourth, you actually did rely on it. And fifth, you were harmed as a result of relying on it.
So basically, you were tricked into doing something you wouldn't have done otherwise, and you suffered because of it.
Exactly. In this case, Lorraine Tessier argued that Rockefeller's promise not to take further action if the money was repaid was a false statement.
And did the court buy that?
Well, they allowed the claim to move forward. Lorraine alleged that Rockefeller knew all along she was going to report Thomas Tessier, regardless of whether he repaid the funds.
So it wasn't just a change of plans, it was a deliberate lie from the beginning.
That's what Lorraine was arguing. She claimed she relied on this promise when she agreed to that reverse mortgage in the settlement, which ultimately cost them a lot of money.
Right, that was the harm.
Precisely. The court even emphasized a key point about fraud. They said it requires conscious indifference to truth to get someone to rely on a statement.
Conscious indifference to truth. That's a powerful phrase. So it wasn't enough for Rockefeller to just be mistaken. She had to know or strongly suspect that what she was saying was false.
Right. There had to be that element of deception. Now let's move on to negligent infliction of emotional distress, or NIG. This one can be a little tricky to understand, especially compared to intentional infliction of emotional distress, which is IIE.
Yeah, what's the difference between those two?
So in New Hampshire, to win on an NIE claim, the general rule is you have to show the defendant acted carelessly and it was foreseeable that their actions would cause you serious emotional distress, and that distress led to some kind of physical harm.
Physical harm, like an injury or illness?
Exactly. So in this case, Lorraine Tessier argued that Rockefeller's threats and actions were negligent, meaning she didn't act with a reasonable level of care, given the situation.
Okay, so far, so good.
And Lorraine said it was totally foreseeable that these actions, aimed at her family's financial security, would cause her severe emotional distress.
I mean, that seems pretty reasonable.
Right. And importantly, she also claimed that this distress was so bad, it landed her in the hospital.
So that's the physical harm.
Yeah, that's key for NAE in New Hampshire. In a way, it helps to prove the severity of the emotional distress. Now, contrast that with IAD, intentional infliction of emotional distress.
What's different about that one?
For IAD, you have to show that the defendant's conduct was outrageously bad, like shockingly terrible, going way beyond what's acceptable in a civilized society.
So like intentionally trying to cause someone severe emotional distress.
Yeah, and doing it in a really egregious way. The court said that Rockefeller's actions, while harsh, didn't rise to that level of outrageousness.
Even though she allegedly lied and caused a lot of harm.
Well, the court said her actions were ultimately about trying to recover a debt, even if she went about it in a really aggressive way. So they didn't see it as crossing that line into outrageous conduct.
Okay, that's a helpful distinction. So, just to recap, NIE is about carelessness that foreseeably leads to emotional distress with physical consequences, while IIED requires truly outrageous conduct.
You got it. Now, the final claim that survived is responded superior. How could Nixon Peabody, the firm, be on the hook for Rockefeller's actions?
Yeah, I'm curious about that one too.
So responded superior is this legal principle that says employers can be held responsible for the wrongful acts of their employees, but only if those acts happened within the scope of their employment.
So like if you're doing your job, but you do it badly and cause harm, your employer might be liable too.
Basically, yeah. In this case, because the claims against Rockefeller for fraudulent misrepresentation and NIED were allowed to proceed, the court said that if a jury found she did those things while acting as a Nixon Peabody attorney, then the firm could be held liable too.
So it all comes down to whether she was acting as a Nixon Peabody attorney when she allegedly made those threats and caused all that distress?
Exactly. If she was, the firm could be in trouble. Now, we should also touch on the claims that didn't survive the motion to dismiss, abusive process, and tortious interference.
Yeah, what happened to those?
So the abusive process claim failed because you need to show that someone misused a legal process for an improper purpose. Reporting an attorney for misconduct, even if it turns out to be unfounded, is generally considered part of a lawyer's ethical duty.
Okay, so it's not abuse if you're reporting something you genuinely believe is wrong, even if you're mistaken.
Right. Now, tortious interference usually involves messing with someone's contracts or business relationships.
Like intentionally trying to sabotage a deal.
Yeah, something like that. The court found that Lorraine Tessier didn't show enough evidence that the defendants directly messed with any specific contract she had.
So even though she suffered harm, the court said it wasn't the right type of harm for those particular legal claims.
Exactly. And this really highlights the importance of understanding the specific requirements for each legal claim. It's not enough to just show harm. You have to show the right kind of harm caused in the right way.
Absolutely. And Tessier v. Rockefeller is a perfect example of that. It also shows how critical it is to be super specific when you're writing legal documents.
Oh, yeah. That's a huge takeaway for law students.
Like, how so?
Well, remember how Lorraine Tessier's NIE claim was allowed to proceed, partly because she specifically mentioned her hospitalization?
Right. The physical manifestation of her emotional distress.
Exactly. If she hadn't included that detail, the claim might have been dismissed, too. On the other hand, the IIED claim didn't have enough specific facts to meet that very high standard for outrageous conduct.
So it's not just about what you claim, but how you claim it. You need to back up your arguments with specific facts.
Precisely. You have to connect the dots for the court, show them exactly how the defendant's actions meet the elements of each legal claim. And for our law student listeners, that's a crucial skill to develop. Tessier v. Rockefeller is a great case study in how to do that effectively, or sometimes how not to do it.
So let's bring it all together. What are the big takeaways from Tessier v. Rockefeller? What should our listeners remember?
I think the biggest lesson is to be precise and thorough when making your arguments.
and not just throw out a bunch of legal claims and hope something sticks.
Right. You need to really understand the elements of each claim and make sure your facts support each one. Like if you're alleging fraud, you have to clearly lay out the false statement, the speaker's knowledge that it's false, their intention to deceive, the fact that the other party relied on it, and the harm that resulted. For NIED in New Hampshire, don't forget that physical manifestation of the emotional distress.
Right. Those specific details are critical.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And it's really important to understand the subtle but important differences between related legal claims like NIE and IED or abusive process and malicious prosecution.
Knowing which tool to use for the job, so to speak.
Exactly. And you always need to check the specific requirements for each cause of action in the state where the case is being filed. Laws can vary from state to state.
Great points. So in this deep dive into Tessier v. Rockefeller, we've explored how the New Hampshire Supreme Court tackled these complex claims of fraudulent misrepresentation and negligent infliction of emotional distress. We've also seen how the court approached the idea of a law firm being held liable for the actions of one of its attorneys.
And we've learned just how important it is to have detailed facts and to match those facts to the specific elements of each legal claim.
It's been a fascinating discussion. Any final thoughts for our listeners?
Well, this case really got me thinking about how the legal system deals with emotional harm, especially when there's no obvious physical injury. What if Lorraine Tessier had suffered severe emotional distress, but it hadn't landed her in the hospital? Would her case have been dismissed? It raises some interesting questions about how we value and recognize emotional suffering in the legal world.
Yeah, that's something for everyone to ponder. How much weight should the law give to emotional harm, even when it's not accompanied by physical injury? It's a complex issue with no easy answers. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive into Tessier v. Rockefeller. We'll see you next time.
See you then.